one of the most important classes we'll ever have. And the main thing is to imagine, you know, when I was a kid, I used to imagine what it would be like if you cared about other people as much as you cared about yourself. And I think it's some kind of holy grail, you know. I think each person here can imagine how nice it would be to care about other people as much as you care about yourself. And I don't think as an adult I've really thought it was possible very often. You know what I mean? You kind of give up on the possibility. From time to time you do something really good for somebody, like you visit someone in the hospital and you feel like a hero, you know. And when you come out, there's just some kind of undeniable holy feeling about it, that you feel really, really good with yourself. And you get some kind of instinct of how it would be if you could do it all the time. You know, if you could really care for other people as much as you care about yourself. And then you go through the rest of your day unable to do it. And then it makes you, that on the other hand, makes you feel sort of restricted or, you know, somehow limited and unhappy. And you feel like a person in a jail, that you can't care for other people as much as you care about yourself. So, in this reading today, Master Shantideva starts to talk about that. And I think as you listen to it, then you try to, in the back of your mind, have the feeling that you would like to be able to reach that, you know, because it's really sweet. I don't think there's anything sweeter than that. I don't think there's anything better than that feeling. And I think you can sense it. And as in so many other things, I think Buddhism presents an actual method that you can use that works. You know, a logical progression of steps that if you try it, you can really get there. And I think that is one of... It's like seeing emptiness directly. I would put those two things in the two most important things that could happen to a person in this life. Is to seeing emptiness directly, or being able to get to the state where you care about other people as much as you care about yourself, which is bodhicitta, okay? So we're going to talk about that. I think it's really beautiful the way Master Shantideva snuck it into the chapter on meditation, okay? I mean, you think of meditation, when you say, I'm studying the meditation chapter from Bodhisattva Charavatara, you think of sitting down and crossing your legs and closing your eyes and like that. That's what comes to mind. And as you've seen so far, Master Shantideva didn't talk about doing that at all. First of all, he spent a lot of time on the mental conditions that support that state of mind, even when you're at work and even when you're going through the day, a way to stay in a meditative state of mind. And then he spoke briefly about the platform of meditation you need to see emptiness directly. But now he's going somewhere else, okay? At the end of the last class, he began to describe what's been called isolation. In Tibetan, it's wenba. And isolation means physical isolation and mental isolation. Mental isolation means you keep your mind away from mental afflictions, like jealousy or anger. And then more profoundly, you keep your mind away from the habit of seeing things as self-existent, which is very difficult, which is the source of all mental afflictions, the source of all anger, source of all jealousy. Then he started to talk about physical isolation, you know, like going out, doing long-term retreats, leaving the city life, going out to the... You can get the first kind of isolation in the city. You can isolate your mind from bad thoughts staying in the city. But the physical isolation he started to talk about. And each person in this room, if you're serious about this path, then eventually you will have to do long-term retreats. You know, you start with a weekend retreat, build up to a week, go to 2 weeks. I think the threshold is just over 2 weeks. I found about 15 to 17, 18 days is when your mind starts to clear out. So if you never do a retreat longer than 15 days, you'll never know. you have to start building up to 3, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. I imagine that each person here who's serious about reaching these goals should do that at least twice a year. And then eventually we should get into longer retreats. And this is the goal. And I think it's a necessary part of your practice. You know, you can learn a lot in the class, and then there's a limit to what you can do in the class. And then you have to start doing retreats, and you have to get out of New York City and take yourself to a place. What kind of place? Okay. Hector, you okay? Can we do that? Okay. Are you ready? We actually caught up on the readings. I mean, people worked like 80 hours or something and didn't get any sleep. And so Hector's going to read the lines for tonight. So read the first one, okay?
Where to devote yourself to meditation. We spend our days in gentle walks and thoughts of helping others. Here, in the silent peace of the forest, flowing in the soft breezes, we live doing as we please in our mansion of a wide flat rock, cool with the touch of moonlight and sandalwood scent of the holy, living deep within the woods of peacefulness, completely emptied of conflict and the afflictions. We live where we please, so long as we like, in abandoned houses or caves, or else at the foot of a tree. We have given up the suffering of owning and protecting things. Carefree we live, relying on nothing.
So someone came up to Master Shantideva and said, what kind of place should we meditate in? And then he describes the place in this verse. And it says, spend your days in gentle walks and thoughts of helping others here in the silent peace of the forest, flowing in soft breezes. We live doing as we please in our mansion of a wide flat rock. It means like if you can find a nice place in the forest or out in the desert someplace that is just simple, like a cave or underneath a rock or someplace, you know, like a ledge, and then stay there, it's like better than a mansion. Then he says, cool with the touch of moonlight and the sandalwood scent of the holy. And here he's comparing moonlight and sandalwood scent to the presence of holy beings. And he's starting to describe, if you know the classical description of the place where you should do your retreat, he's throwing it all in here without telling you. Okay? And what this line means is, you should find a place where holy beings have been before. And they've left their stink on that place. You know, they call it the fragrance of the holy beings. You know, like Tsuchimgichima means, Chima means a sweet smell, and Tsuchim means morality. And so, ethical person. And supposedly, I remember being near His Holiness, and you get this scent, this fragrance, you know, and it's a person who's keeping their vows well. They leave their fragrance in a room. If His Holiness has been in your room and he leaves, there's this kind of presence still there. And so they say you should try to find a place like that to meditate, where holy beings have lived before. Living deep within the woods of peacefulness. Here he's making a pun, and he explains it. Gyaltsebje explains it in the commentary. Peacefulness here means away from the two extremes that destroy meditation. And we spoke about them. Chingu ni. Say chingu ni. Chingu ni. Hopefully that baby will be able to talk louder than these people. Anyway, ching. Ching means like dullness. If you want to experience it, then eat too much or eat some sugar. Have some coffee before you meditate, a couple of pieces of pizza. Don't get enough sleep, and you'll get chingwa. Gopa means have too many projects, have a lot of things going on in your desire realm life. You know, like lots of girlfriends, lots of music, lots of art, lots of places to go. You know, make sure that your mind doesn't settle on anything. Have lots of nice dharma projects, like more than you can handle. And make sure that your mind is skipping around from one to the other. And that's gopa. And here, peacefulness of the forest means mental isolation from those two extremes. And that's what Master Shantideva is saying. The next verse he says, we live it where we please as long as we like. And here Master Shantideva is trying to point out that this is liberation in a physical sense. You know, if you can go out on retreat, you will find your own independence. And he says it's more pleasant than being a king. And if you've ever been on long retreat out in the wilderness, you get this feeling after a while. You know, you're alone. Nobody will know if you ever live or die. Nobody could probably find you if there was an accident or something. You're just out there. And it's very interesting to just expose yourself and release yourself and surrender yourself to the nature of the place. And you go, you know, into a canyon somewhere. No one would ever find you if a snake bit you or something. It would be like 6 months before anyone found you. And there's sort of this freedom to that, that no one knows where you are. No one knows what you're doing. No one could find you if you died. And it's very, very liberating. And it's really cool. You should try it. And just go. And you have no one, it says here, no one to depend on. You have no hopes. You have no plans. You're just out there. No one could help you if you got in trouble. And there's something very liberating about putting yourself in that position in retreat. Okay. If you're starting retreats, if you're just starting retreats, or if you're not experienced, let's say if you haven't done a total of about a year of retreats or 2 years of retreats in pieces, you shouldn't do it like that. You should have a lama around. You should have access to someone to help you in case you get in trouble, okay? Which happens. And then he says, we have given up the suffering of owning and protecting things. Tibetans, Buddhism describes two kinds of suffering. Say, maybe. Louder, maybe. Dunya. Maybe. Dunya. Then, yube. Dunya. Yube. Dunya. Maybe dungyal means the suffering you have when you're still trying to get something. Suffering of not having something. Like you want money, you want a relationship, you want some object, you want a certain position at work, you want a certain degree or something. And maybe dungyal means the suffering you have when you're still trying to get it. Yubi dungyal is the other side of the coin. After you get the thing you wanted, there's this suffering of having it and trying to protect it and not losing it. You know, and it immediately switches. Like, I've been a vice president in a large corporation, 1,000 people. And you're like, got your eyes on this vice president's chair and vice president's desk and vice president's office. And you work and work and work and work. And finally the boss calls you in and says, we're making you a VP, you know. And you're like, you know, and you're so happy. And you go out and you have a dinner, you know. And then the next day you're sitting in that office. And then your mind totally reverses itself. And you're thinking, how can I stay here? How can I keep this place? How can I keep other people out of this chair? You know? And the whole thing switches and it becomes the anxiety of trying to get it turns into the anxiety of trying to stay there. And that's Yopen maybe dungyal. So he says, if you go on retreat, you're freed from that suffering. You don't have the suffering of trying to get something, and you don't have the suffering of having something and then trying to protect it from other people. Okay? This reading is designed a little funny. If you think about it, you'll see, if you look at the outline, which I hope you're doing, okay? You're not getting the whole Bodhisattva Charvatara. You're getting very beautiful chunks. And it's very important for you to look at the outline and see how the chunks you're getting come in the whole flow of the text. Because it's there, okay? You should read through the outline and you should see where you are. Why does he go in the outline suddenly? He goes from the best place to do your retreat, and then suddenly he's talking about compassion. Okay, how does he make that jump? I was trying to figure out where he did it, and it's here. Baby mantras, okay. Go ahead, Hector. We'll just go to the next one.
Contemplation 14, what to meditate upon, the service of others. Think of these considerations and others as well. Contemplate the benefits of isolation. Put an end to useless thoughts and meditate upon the wish for enlightenment. From the very beginning, exert yourself in the practice of treating others and yourself the same. When the happiness and the sufferings are the same, then you will care for all just as you do yourself.
So he's shifting gears here, and he's going from the place you should meditate to what you should meditate on. And if you've ever done a long-term retreat, like a month or 2 months, you get rid of your namtok. Namtok means, we called it here useless thoughts. Namtok means worrying about the garbage, you know, worrying about your job, worrying about all these other things, thinking about having this relationship or that relationship or owning this thing or owning that thing or getting this position or not getting this position and getting this degree and not having this degree and etc. Those are all namto. And after you've been in retreat like a week, it dawns on you that you don't have anything to think about anymore, because there's nothing there. You know, there's absolutely nothing to think about. And it's also, it's kind of lonely. It kind of strikes you, you know, I don't have anything to think about. And then you wonder, what am I supposed to do, you know? And people actually get nervous at this point in retreat, you know. They're like, well, what am I supposed to think about? And if you're having a bad retreat, you start to obsess on somebody at work, you know. And then for like 2 weeks, you can obsess on somebody because you don't have anything else to think about. The mind needs something to think about. The mind is thirsty for something to think about. And your mind will start to grasp to something to think about. So Master Shantideva says, release the namtoks, you know, release all those useless thoughts. And as that vacuum appears, makes its appearance, then fill it up with thoughts of others. He says, fill it up with compassion. And that's really a beautiful way to do a retreat. When you do a retreat, this is like the sweetest thing you can do during your retreat, is to do some kind of meditation about compassion. So he says, meditate upon the wish for enlightenment. This is bodhicitta. It's the desire to reach enlightenment to help other people. And then I think this is where Gyaltsab Jay, this is his next sentence. He says, what is the method, you may ask, which I should use to meditate upon this wish, bodhicitta? And Master Shantideva replies and says, you should from the very beginning exert yourself in the practice of treating others and yourself the same. So this is, if you ever do a retreat, this is the whole second half of this chapter, or actually the main part of the chapter. Master Shantideva tricks us. We thought we were going to be getting all these deep instructions on how to meditate, you know, and breath meditation and all these sexy, profound things. And then he gets us right into the chapter, and then he switches us over to compassion. And he's going to stay on compassion for the rest of the chapter. And how he got it in there, I still don't know. But anyway, the practice is this. Action. Nyamba. Dakshin. Nyamba. Okay. Master Shantideva will go through two different methods to get to bodhicitta. Okay? Two different methods to reach the place where you care about other people as much as you care about yourself. And very difficult to reach that place. And I repeat that it would be perhaps one of the most important events in your life if you could have that, if it could ever happen to you. And you will also, it's like seeing emptiness directly. The day that it happens, you will know. The day that you have the direct experience of bodhicitta for the first time, what they call genuine bodhicitta, you will know it. And it will be a separate, distinct, very powerful, very moving experience. And it's also linked to some physical this experience of a physical force within you and going out and reaching other people. It's a very profound experience. And I would put it, you know, seeing emptiness directly and having the direct experience of bodhicitta are the two goals of your life. If you're in this class, those are two things that you must try to trigger in your heart. And this tonight, you're going to get the first part of how to do it. So you have to listen, and you have to try to think about it. It was very difficult to translate this section because it was so foreign to the human mind. You know, I think here, I imagine Master Shantideva floating up off his throne about here. He didn't really do it till the ninth chapter, I don't remember. But I imagine him, I mean, you get a physical emotion of him leaving us behind at this point, because he's going to be giving us arguments that are so foreign and so against our normal way of thinking that it was very hard to translate, and it was very hard to think about it. So see if you can catch it. You know, this is where we part the men from the boys. You know, we call kalwa. Kalwa means, do you have the spiritual goodness within you to hear what's about to happen? You know, and some people in this room who have kalwa will get it, and some people won't get it. And for me, it was very difficult. I felt this emotion of Shantideva, Master Shantideva, almost passing me, you know, going so high that I couldn't figure out what he was talking about. So try to hang in there, okay? Try to ignite your kalwa. You know, it's hard. It's very hard. What we're about to present is very hard for the human mind to handle. And if you have kalwa, it'll floor you. And if you don't have kelwa, you'll just think, sounds kind of weird. And most of us are somewhere in between. Okay? But let's go ahead, okay? Dak means me. Shen means other people. Nyamba means exactly the same. Exactly the same. Me and other people, exactly the same. The practice that you're going to hear about tonight, you know, very sacred practice, very holy practice. The holiest thing you could ever meditate on, okay, is how to treat yourself and others exactly the same. Okay? How to treat yourself and other people exactly the same. How to be as worried about other people's happiness as you are about your own. How to be as worried about other people's pain as you are about your own. I got this cold today, you know, and I was very worried about, you know, I spent a lot of time focusing on myself and how bad I felt, and then I realized a friend of mine got Lyme's disease like a week ago, and I remember he was like sweating, and he obviously had a fever, and I just was sweating from this little cold, and then I was reflecting on how much stronger my emotion was about myself, who has a cold that's going to go away, and this other person who has something potentially very dangerous, you know, and I'm much more worried about my little fever from my cold, you know. And why? You know, what causes that? And could I ever reach a point where I was treated him exactly the same as I treat myself? As I worried about him as much as I was worried about myself. Could I ever do that? This is this practice, okay? Very, very holy. Very, very holy practice. Dakshen Nyamba. Say Dakshen Nyamba. Just to say the word and to hear the word in a person's lifetime is kelwa. You know, you have to be a karmic millionaire to hear this word. You know, you have to be a karmic millionaire just to hear this holy word. Say Dakshen Nyamba. Dakshen Nyamba.
Contemplation 15. They are a part of you too. There are many parts, separate parts, the hands and all the rest. But we dearly care for them all as a single body. Just so shall I work for the happiness of every different being, treating all as equal, all as one, thinking of their joy, pain, as if it were my own.
Here we start to get into an argument, okay? Shantideva starts to present the idea to other people. He says, look, you should treat other people exactly as you treat yourself. I mean, just the word is kind of weird, right? I mean, you won't hear that on Second Avenue anywhere. You know, you hear a lot of languages and lots of different words, but you don't hear people saying, you should treat other people exactly the same as you treat yourself. And we start to hear a kachik. Kachik means someone comes and starts to fight with Shantideva, Master Shantideva, and says, you know, sounds great, can't do it, you know. And he starts to complain, he starts to raise objections, he starts to attack Master Shantideva and say, you know, you're too idealistic, this thing is impossible, this thing you're talking about, it can't happen. And his first objection is this one. He says, look, in the world, there's so many different kinds of beings, you know. First of all, there's all these different kinds of people. And then there's all these different kinds of animals. And then there must be people on other planets. And then if you're a Buddhist, or even if you're not a Buddhist, there must be other realms. There must be other places where there are living beings that we can't see. You know, you could call them other dimensions, doesn't matter. But there must be people, thinking beings, in places that we are not aware of. There must, in the way that we're not aware of all the colors in the spectrum. I think human eye can see a tiny part of the spectrum. Believe me, the human mind can only grasp a small part of the living spectrum. There are beings that we can't see. There are beings around us that you cannot see. They're all there, and someone makes the objection to Master Shantideva, how on earth could I ever treat them like myself? Because then I would have to think of them as myself. You know, I would have to think of those people as myself before I could treat them like myself. Okay? That's a big leap, okay? And you have to get that leap. To treat someone as yourself, you would almost have to start thinking of them as yourself. Okay? And that's a big jump. This is what Master Shantideva is saying. At this point, the theory is you have to actually start looking at other people as yourself. Okay? And that's a very profound idea. And then the objection, immediate objection is, look, too many. You know, how can there be so many Michael Roaches running around? I can't take care of that many people. You know, if I had to buy shoes for everybody in this room, I can hardly buy them for myself, you know. How can I, if I related to all the feet in this room, twice as many as the people, in most cases, how would I ever do it, you know? How could I ever see everyone in this room as myself? And that's a profound question, and that's the whole question tonight. Okay, where does me end? Does me end at my skin? You know, does the me self-existently and naturally and inherently end at the edge of my skin? Okay, and that's the whole question tonight. Okay, does Michael Roach end at the end of Michael Roach's skin? You know, we'll include the arm hairs too. Okay, does he end at the end of that hair? How does that happen that we decide that? Is that fixed in stone? Is that self-existent? You know, does it always have to be that way? Is what I call Michael Roach limited to the ends of my fingers? You know, could it ever go further? Could it ever go less? You know, I have this concept, I have this definition of me, and it covers to the edge of my body normally. And then if you're possessive, it covers to your things. Like if someone came into my briefcase, someone today wanted to borrow my computer, and I was like, you know, I mean, Michael Roach extends to this computer already, you know, and it felt very uncomfortable. And it, ultimately, I said no. And what I mean is, I've chosen to stretch myself out a little further than my hand. It's the immediate possessions that I own, and this is Michael Roach for me. And if something happens to one of them, Michael Roach gets mad. And so the person complains to Master Shantidevi. He says, how could I ever think of all these people in this room as Michael Roach? You know, I don't see how I could do it. And then Master Shantideva, he's a very great logician. He's a great debater. And I think the greatness of his debating is that you don't know he's a great debater. He doesn't show off. He just says great things. So he says, think about your hands and think about your legs. You know, how many? The guy says, two hands, two legs. And he says, are they you or not? And the guy says, well, they're part of me, you know, they're part of my body, you know. So Master Shantideva says, okay, are they one thing or many things? Well, there's four. And, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes. We can say 20, count the hands and feet, 24, something like that. You know, there's a lot. Fingers and toes, there's a lot. And then he says, is that you or not? And the guy says, well, I guess it is me. And he says, why? And he says, because if somebody comes and tries to cut my finger, I get mad. You know, I try to protect that thing. So I must believe that it's me. You know, this is part of what I consider me. Because if someone tries to hurt it, I'm like fighting with them. I'm pushing them. You know, if someone tries to come and stick a knife in your hand, in your finger, then you're like pushing them back. Because you believe this is part of you. You believe that it's part of you. So Shantideva says, so what's the difference? You know, it's just your belief that it's part of you that makes you push the person back. There's no other reason. You have decided to limit what you call Michael Roach to your skin and to the things you own immediately. You've decided to do that. And when someone attacks it, so why not decide to spread it a little bit? You know, what's the difference? Your fingers and your toes are plural. They are not one Michael Roach. But you choose to decide, this is Michael Roach, and you protect it with your life. You know, someone comes up and sticks a knife in your little finger, you're in their face and you're hitting them. You know, you make that decision where you decide. So he says, don't think it's independent, don't think it's self-existent, don't think that it has to be that way. You're choosing to do it that way, and you could just as well decide Michael Roach spreads to the first three pews. You know, and you could decide all of these people are Michael Roach also. It's all in your mind. Where you decide you ends and where you decide you begins is a decision. It's a mental thing. Much of it is forced on you by your past karma. Okay? You have a perception. I mean, bodhisattvas have overcome that karma. They they actually don't think that Michael Roach ends here. Michael Roach ends somewhere at David Sykes' back, you know, and he's me. And if he gets in trouble, I get in trouble. And they've actually, from their karma, they are actually perceiving that Michael Roach ends at the back of David Sykes. And so this, he is me. You know, as far as taking care of him, he's me. I have to take care of him because it's part of me. It's like taking care of my own fingers and my own toes. You decide that me is going to spread to your 5, 10 fingers and 10 toes. So decide that me is going to spread to the back of David Sykes. Can your karma change? Can you actually come to see me, Michael Roach, as spreading to the back of David Sykes? And so that David Sykes is Michael Roach, and I have to take care of him the way I take care of Michael Roach. Yes, of course. How? Oh, very Shantidevian. Okay? Practice. You know? And do you start the first day at the back of David Sykes? No. You start with something small that he needs. Right? You start with what? Potatoes and carrots. Okay? You start with potatoes. And he's... You cannot do it if you do this big schmeal. If you go out of here tonight and say, everyone in Manhattan is Jesse Davis, you know, and he who stubs his toe, I stub my toe, and I will run to you with a Band-Aid. Forget it. You can't do it. You have to start small. You have to start modest. And you have to keep practicing. And there's no reason then, very Shantidevian, if you keep doing it every day and you keep working on your mind, there's no reason why me has to end here. You know, me could end over there. And then I could watch out for David Sykes the same way I watch out for myself. And that's liberation. You know, that's freedom. That's like the happiest you could ever be. If you could achieve it, start small, work on it, and then go to the other side. Jim said the difference between our fingers and other fingers is that it's pretty obvious. You know, I mean, if someone jams my finger with a knife, it's ouch. And if someone jabs his finger with a knife, it's, oh, too bad, man. You know, you know. And this is precisely the next objection. Okay? And I remember Rinpoche, you know, our Holy Lama, teaching this subject 25 years ago in New York City. And exactly the same question came up. And it's the obvious question. You know, when my friend gets fired, I don't get fired. When my friend gets his hand cut, I don't get my hand cut. I can't feel the way he feels his pain. So how can I ever do it? How can I ever really be as concerned about David Sykes as I am about Michael Roach? And Master Shantidevas, again, it's this thing of you have to learn to define yourself as Michael Roach has to end at his back. But we'll talk about it more. I think in the... Let me make sure I got your homework covered. Yeah, so we'll... I mean, that last contemplation goes like this. In theory, okay, and I agree with Jim, that we have to address the next question. Next question has to be, but I don't go ouchy when someone sticks a knife in the other guy. Okay, we'll get there. But let's step back. And he says, this... The point here is that realize the idea. The idea is that you decide where you end. And you always have. Okay? There's a certain percentage of your definition of you which is forced on you by your past karma. You truly believe that Michael Roach ends at those fingers. Or at the things I possess that I care about. You know, you truly believe that. And that you were born with. I mean, when you came out of your mother's womb, you were born with a certain karma that made you think that you end at your fingers. But we know, the people who have studied emptiness in this room, you know that's what do you call it? Arbitrary. You know, that's arbitrary. It could have been any way. It could have been any other way. You know, you meet people, I was thinking today of Einstein. I mean, his conception of himself ended at the roots of his hair. Because he could care less what his hair looks like, you know. You know, he had a sense of self that stopped short of his hair. Or you meet people whose sense of self stops short of their clothes. And then you meet other people whose sense of self totally goes beyond their clothes. Like they must this is me. This is part of me. It better look good, you know. And you see both. You see both. I mean, anything, it's arbitrary. You must realize that. There's nothing fixed in stone about it. It's arbitrary. Now, most of it is decided by your past karma, and you have a sense of yourself that is very difficult to deal with, you know. You do have a sense of yourself that you were born with, that you can't help, that tells you Michael Roach ends here. In fact, they don't even call him Michael Roach. They call him David Sykes. They gave him a different name. So apparently most of the people in the world think Michael Roach doesn't go to his back, you know, and you have to deal with that. You live in a world created by your karma that says that he's not you and that I'm over here and he's over there and I do not extend beyond him. But then there's another you, and there's a you that you can manipulate if you choose to by practice. You know, that's the big thing Master Shantideva is saying. By practice, decide you want to do it, start small, and then eventually your sense of you could be bigger than that. And you see great saints, Albert Schweitzer, Mother Teresa, they seem to have overcome the limitation of thinking of themselves as stopping at the edge of their skin. They seem to have, that Mother Teresa to Mother Teresa, I imagine, extends to many suffering people. I believe that she actually, to some extent, perceives them as herself. And when she takes care of them, it's as natural as brushing her own teeth. You know, I believe that. And we have to, we're stuck with a sort of perception of ourself that we were born with. But it's not written in stone. It's not self-existent. It is arbitrary. You can work on it, and you must work on it. Because you can't reach happiness unless you do. Impossible. Okay, you must learn to extend the definition of you to beyond your skin, or you'll fail. You'll never succeed. This path will never mean anything to you. This is the key. Okay, you have, it's not take care of other people as yourself. It's perceive them as yourself and then take care of yourself. Okay, got it? It's not taking care of other people as yourself. It's realizing that they are you. And then take care of them because you're taking care of yourself. And you take care of your fingers. It's not like it's a big obligation. You know, you don't say, oh, today, fingers, you're in really good luck today. You know, I'm decided to take care of you. I'm going to clip your fingernails today because I'm feeling so magnanimous today. You know, you don't say that. You consider them you. And there will come a day that each person in this room looks around and sees actually as the other people as themselves. And when they take care of another person, it's because they actually see them as themselves. Because they have stretched the definition of themselves out past their skin. There's no reason why it has to stop here, except for this thing about pain, and we have to talk about it. Okay? I mean, somebody rubs some other guy's back, I don't get a thrill. Okay? We have to talk about that. That's a reasonable objection. But in theory, there's no reason why it has to end there. In theory, what you decide as yourself is up to you. You have limitations that you were born with. I almost use a bad word. Blank them, okay? You don't have to live with them. You can choose. You can choose where you end. Okay, yeah. She said, when you see others as yourself, is that a kind of protection? What I'm saying is that the day that you treat others as yourself, it will be because you see them as yourself. And that's the key. She says it's a kind of protection. Of course it is, yeah. I mean, there's this big controversy nowadays about this protector deity. Big, big controversy. People killing each other. What is the ultimate protection? I mean, the scriptures are all very clear. It's compassion. It is compassion. It's not some guy with a black face and four ears and big fangs or something like that. It's not that. The nature of that being is compassion. The nature of that being is pure love. When you get it, it is the ultimate protection for yourself. Of course, yeah. When you go into retreat and you do these elaborate protection rituals, which we have learned and which we do, in the bottom line is bodhicitta. You know, if you don't want boogeymen coming into your retreat and ruining it, which normally comes in the form of thoughts about the guy at work and ruining your retreat, you put up this bodhicitta fence. You know, you put up this wall of love around you, and it protects you. And you have to learn to do that. Okay? Yeah, that's a protection. I think I'll rephrase it, okay? It's a tenet of Buddhism. It's a basic principle of Buddhism. It's one of the grounding truths of Buddhism, that we are separate mind streams. Okay? It's like, I always say it's like an infinite spaghetti noodle. And they never mix. Never, ever. I mean, even up to the time that you become enlightened, my mind stream and your mind stream will never join. Cannot. Because by definition, your mind stream is the karmic result of your own past deeds and can never be anything else. I cannot collect good karma for you. I cannot take away your bad karma. I can't do anything. You must do it yourself. And that's a guiding principle of Buddhism. Even when you become Buddha, although they all have the same nature, they are separate beings. And they have their own Buddha paradises and they live their own separate lives. And this is forever going to be like that. She says, so what is it, where do you come in, you know, where does your thing come in there? That's true, and you are separate mental continua. And I cannot collect good karma from you, even after I decide to include you in my definition of myself. Okay, so that's the answer to your question. It is not true that you will ever become me. You will never become my mental continuum. You know, you cannot share my karma. You can only collect your own karma and get the results of your own karma. That's why Buddhas are not omnipotent. Okay? They cannot take away your pain. They cannot take away one atom of your pain. And they can't give you one atom of happiness. Impossible. All they can do is teach you to do it yourself. What's the proof of that? It's so simple that you miss it. We're still suffering. So either they're sadists or they can't do it. Okay? I mean, there's only two choices. You know, they're playing with these little bugs and making them suffer, or they can't do anything. And the answer is number two. They can't do anything. All they can do is teach you to do it yourself. It doesn't affect your mind stream. It doesn't affect your karmic flow that I think of you as myself, or that I even believe that you are myself. Okay? That's true. Okay? Yeah. She said, what about the bodhisattva who's happily giving away his eyeball? Does that mean that when I achieve Dakshin Nyamba, I can give away David Sykes' eyeball? That's a Lungma Ten Chushi. That's one of the unanswered questions. Yeah, by the way, that does come up. I mean, Master Shantideva does address that. And he says, no, you can't. You can't. You don't have the right to take another person's... No, it's not. The perception of him being me is only insofar as achieving his happiness and eliminating his pain, not to cause him new pain. Okay, yeah? No. Impossible. Okay. Next verse is for Mr. Jim Halpern. Go ahead, Hector.
What makes pain mine? Suppose you object and say that your pain never hurts the body of another. Even so, your pain is something you can't bear just for one reason, your grasping to yourself. Just so, even though it's true that suffering others feel never comes and strikes you, still it's your suffering, since you'll find them hard to bear once you grasp to yourself.
This is the answer to Jim's question, and I mean, it has to come up in the mind of any intelligent person. You know, if you sit here and buy everything without objecting when you should object, it's very suspicious. Rinpoche would say, oh, you know everything. Meaning you haven't been listening at all and the objection that you should have had didn't come up in your mind. You should object at that point. The hand should be up in the air. You know, I can change my conception of me, but that doesn't mean that I can feel him when he gets stuck with a pin. Or if he gets his back scratched, you know, I don't feel my back getting scratched. Okay? And this is Master Shantideva's answer. All right? Suppose you object and say that your pain never hurts the body of another. And he goes both ways. Gyaltsep Jay says, look, when I get hurt, it's not going to hurt David Sykes. When David Sykes gets hurt, it's not going to hurt me. Even so, your pain is something you cannot bear for just one reason. You're grasping to yourself. Meaning, The fact that you don't like pain, the fact that you can't stand pain that comes to you, comes from only one thing, and that's your own decision of where you define yourself. And that's very subtle, and you got to catch it, okay? The fact that you find any particular pain or suffering unbearable, you know, you decide, I have to do something now. Unbearable means what? I must act now. This must not go on. You know, it only occurs with yourself within the limitations that you have set for what you call yourself. In other words, you have this boundary that you've defined as me. And it's up to you. You're born with a certain boundary. I say blank that boundary. You know, you don't have to leave that boundary there. And in fact, you cannot reach enlightenment if you put up with that boundary. Okay? The boundary is not fixed. But you're born with a certain boundary, a certain perceptions caused by your past karma. So, it's you who decides that once my boss crosses this line, I'm not going to stand up for it anymore. You know? They can, people can use my credit card to a certain point. But when it gets over that limit, that's it. I will take action. You know, people can say things to me to a certain point, but when it goes past a certain thing, that's all I can take, you know. I can share my friends and the things I own with other people, but only up to a point. I mean, if they do that with them, that's too much. You know, then I must act. This is what Master Shantideva calls sukhava. Sukhava means this is what you define as the limit of what you can stand. You know, and I can't... Was it Popeye said? No. What is it? Yeah, I can't... Where does it go, the whole thing? You don't remember the whole line? It's all I can stand and I can't stand no more, you know? I mean, it's like you decide. You decide where it is, you know? And that's what I'm saying. And different people, you know, they have different envelopes, right? I mean, really good people, you can see them even get hit or cut, and they won't get angry. You know, like what they declare is not standable anymore, not bearable anymore, is very, very narrow. And you see other people who, you know, if somebody talks bad about their cat, they're already angry. You know, I mean, their definition of themselves is pretty big and indefensible, by the way. You know, of what they'll put up with is too big. Okay, and Master Shantideva is saying, this line is up to you. You know, so very, very interesting answer to Jim Halpern's question. And I've always wondered about it. It's always been a struggle for me too, since 20 years ago. Master Shantideva, in my opinion, is backing down. He's saying, you're right. I cannot... David Sykes with a knife. I can't. But what I decide is the limit of what I can stand to put up with is up to me. You know? And I choose not to put up with someone sticking a knife in David Sykes. Now, I choose to expand what I will put up with to him. And that's profound. That's very, very profound. You know, I choose not to bear his suffering. You know, when I see him being uncomfortable, when I see him suffering, I choose that I must respond to it the same way I respond to my own suffering. Even though I can't feel it. Okay? That's what Master Shantideva is saying. So he's still, it's fantastic. You know, it's just fantastic. I mean, it's, you know, and I think it clarifies a lot of things. Because you always feel guilty that you can't quite feel the other guy's fever as much as you can feel your own. You know, you're always like, you know, gee, I wish, maybe I'm not empathetic enough, you know. It's not the point. You just have to decide you will not put up with his fever any more than you'll put up with your own. And that's what it means to treat yourself and others exactly the same. Okay, you make a decision. I will not put up with any kind of depression in my friend. When she has depression, I will act. You know, I will treat her mind as my own. I decide to expand my definition of Michael Roach. You know, and that you can do without feeling her depression. You see what I mean? And that's the answer. And it's a beautiful question. Because you have to answer that question. Yeah. It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, sure. No, you can't feel all of their pain. But if you cared, if you decided they were you, you would observe. You would get very good at observing. You know, you would get some kind of empathy so good that as soon as they're jealous, you know. And you're already helping them get over it. You know, you're already working with them. You sense. You get very good at it. If you're sincere about it, you can feel others' pain pretty instinctively, pretty intuitively. You can gain a kind of intuition where you're very sensitive to other people's pain, and you can start helping immediately. You know, and that's a goal, and you can do it. But you must stop thinking of yourself as stopping at your skin. Again, it's not written in stone. Nobody decided that. The whole world has decided that. You know, the whole world. You know, we can make our own decisions. I choose to extend my definition of myself to that next person. And when something's bothering them, I choose to decide I cannot stand it anymore. And I will act, I will do something, you know. When they want something, I choose to decide I will get it for them as much as if I was getting it for myself. That's very hard, you know. Something you really want, and then somebody else wants the same thing. And to make the decision that they have as much right to it as I do. Why? Because they're me. That's profound. That's very profound. Okay? Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. Okay? I mean, Sky is calling back to the point that that really all these things are karmic results, right? I mean, if you suddenly decide one day, oh, you know, Mark Minervini is me, you know, what made you do that? You know, what was the karma that made you do that? It's ironic. Practice is karma. Very interesting. Practicing thinking a certain way creates the karma to be able to think that way. And practice is also bound by the laws of karma. Practice works because of karma. Practice is just watching karma create something intentionally. It's very interesting. The reason you get better at skiing because you do it over and over again is not because you did it over and over again. It's interesting. It's the karma. It's the karma involved. It's very interesting. Why do some people try to learn something and can't? Why do other people try to learn something and can? If practice was what made perfect, then everybody should learn it the same by trying 20 lessons. And that's not the case. What's really happening is the karma of trying makes it come true. You know, it's the karma of practicing it that makes it come true. You know, I was thinking about jealousy the other day. You know, I was having a jealous state of mind, and I was having an antidote, what they call an antidote state of mind. We were having a war here. You know, it was like 50-50. And the left side of the brain or wherever was saying, that's bad, stop that. And the right side of the brain was saying, no, you know, it's true. And there was this big war going on. And then I was considering the karma, you know, I was thinking, gee, what kind of karma am I collecting right now? Let's see. The jealousy is creating really, really terrible karma. It's like a kind of hatred. I'm losing good karma at a fantastic rate of speed. You know, it's like incredible leakage of good karma out of my brain right now, caused by the jealousy. But the fight is an incredible good karma. You know, and why? And I was wondering why the fight would be such a good karma. Because the fight is practice. You know, the fight is a seed for the next day that I'll be able to fight better. And then the fighting of the next day is a seed for the following day that I'll be able to fight it even better. So really, if you think about it, the virtue of the fight is infinitely more good than the nastiness of the emotion I was fighting with, you know. And that's the whole story. You can overcome it. Because practice really means collecting the karma to see things that way. And you will. And you can do it. You can come to a point where every living being in the whole universe, those seen and unseen, they say, those you can see and those that you're not aware of right now, your decision of whose happiness you're going to work for will spread to them. It's very profound. And it's a really neat experience. It's an extraordinary experience. And you will reach it. You can reach it. You have to practice. You know, you have to start small, but you can do it. And it's incredible. It's just extraordinary. And then you will spend the rest of your life working for other people. And very, very sweet. Very, very sweet. Yeah. I think what Yulia is saying is that you can make a decision about your own happiness. You can say, look, don't have that emotion. That's really lousy. Stop that. And you can cure yourself. But suppose I expand Michael Roach to David Sykes, sorry, okay? like the David Roach or something like that, right? And I decide to expand to him. And then I'm trying to get him to stop his jealousy the same way I'm trying to stop my own jealousy. What if, Yulia's saying, what if he doesn't feel like doing that right now? Well, I mean, that's all you can do. By the way, I mean, Buddhist ethics, Buddhist virtue is 90% what? Intention. What did Master Shantideva say about poverty? He said, if you're going to sit around and wait till the day that there's no more homeless people in the world before you say that anyone has perfected giving, forget it. You're going to be here forever. You know, perfecting giving doesn't mean that all the people around you have enough to eat at all. It's the intention. It's the state of mind. It's the perfection of giving. When you're ready to give your body over a lifetime to other people, you perfected giving. You don't have to worry about it anymore. It's not that everybody's going to get what they need, because that's up to their karma. Okay, so that's the answer to that. Let's take a break and come back in 10 minutes, okay? Okay. Hector's going to read the next verse, okay? By the way, the point here is we're kind of moving beyond Jim's question, you know? If someone else gets happy, if someone else gets their back scratched, and Michael Roach doesn't get his back scratched, how am I supposed to feel about it? You know, why am I supposed to work as hard to make sure they get their back scratched as I am to make sure I get my back scratched, okay? I mean, what? Do you have any proof that this is a reasonable thing to do? And Master Shantideva says, okay.
I must stop the pains of others because it's pain. It's like the pain that I myself feel. I must act to help all others because they're living beings. It's like the body that I own.
I'm going to hit you with a little bit of logic, okay? Formal logic. By the way, I've kind of decided that the first course in 98, if we live that long, will be some basic logic, okay? Basic logic subjects, which includes perceptual theory and stuff like that. So here's a little foretaste, okay? Yeah. Master Shanti, Gyaltsep Jay puts this verse into two logical statements. So you're going to get to learn the form of a logical statement. Tibetan or Buddhist logic was invented by Gautama. Okay? Seriously, Buddhist logic was invented by the Buddha, and he used it a lot. He debated. And it hasn't changed in 2,500 years. This is still the same format. So we're going to give you two formal logical statements. It's called a Tsusum Yimba. It has a Dak, it has a Churchen, it has a Dubje Chur, it has a Gakje Chur, it has a Tumbe Yangda, and you have to learn all these things. Okay? This is formal logic. Say Semchen, Shengi, Dumya, Churchen. Okay, that's how we debate in the monastery, okay? Semchen, Shengi, Dumya, Churchen. Then you go like that. Okay? And it's like Muhammad Ali, you know, you're supposed to shake the guy up. And if you can learn to hold your own while someone's spitting in your face, screaming in your face, hitting your hat off, pulling at you, then when you get in a nice, quiet classroom in New York City, and someone asks you a tough question like Jim Halpern did, you can just calmly answer. And it's a practice, you know, it's very good practice. So we do that in the monastery 4, 5, 6 hours a day, sometimes 15 hours a day, you know, attacking and rebuttal. So Chochen, Semchen, Shen. Semchen means sentient being, living being. Shen means another, other living beings. Okay. Dungyal means the sufferings that they have, the pain that they have. Okay, Chochen, you have to learn, okay? Chochen, hey, let's talk about that. That's our subject that we're going to debate about. Chochen means that's the subject of debate. I propose, let's talk about Semchen Shengi Dungyal Chuchen. Okay? Then that's how you open a debate. Okay? You put out the thing that you're going to argue about. Let's fight about other people's suffering. Okay? I want to talk about other people's suffering. Chuchen. Okay? Say Daki Selwar Rikte. Okay? Daki means by me. Selwar means to remove. Rikte. Rik means that is something right to do. Rik means it's right to do. Okay, something right, correct to do. Okay, that is something right to do. dakisaurite, it's right that I should try to remove their suffering. Okay? Consider other people's suffering. Okay? It is something that I should work to remove. Why? Okay? We're looking for the dak. Dak means the reason. Okay? Well, what was the reason? Oh. Say, dunya. Yimbe. Yeah. You know, you're going like that. Dunya means, what? Suffering. Yimbechir means because it's suffering. So what's the full proof? By the way, here you have a churchen, dubjechir, dayan da. It has a kyaba, it has a chokchir, it has jekyab, dokyab. Perfect logical statement. It has all the requirements, okay? Consider the pain that other people feel. It is something that I should work to remove because it's pain. And that's profound. And it just goes over your head. You know, you sit there and say, okay, you know, sounds okay. But it's just pointing out that if you do feel empathy, or if someone else is feeling really bad and you start to feel bad with them, if you, that's also some kind of karma that you have. But it's a different kind in the sense that it's a sweetness. You see what I mean? Like, people have always asked me, and it's a good question, you know, the Buddha's sense are suffering. Does that mean that they have suffering? No. They have this sweet concern for our suffering, but they don't feel suffering. You see what I mean? They know we're suffering. They perceive that suffering directly as well as we do. But their reaction to it is some kind of sweet compassion. So actually they're getting some kind of sweetness out of it. It's very interesting. But you are right that it would be our karma to do that. Okay. Anyway, the point here is this, and it's very profound. Don't let it go over your head. Try to get the kelwa, okay? One, two, three. Suffering is something that you and I are responsible to remove wherever it is located. If it happens to be outside the border of what you call yourself or inside the border of what you call yourself, is irrelevant. You're just making a mistake on the border. The border is big. And any suffering in the world is something you are responsible to address, and you must address, whether it's in someone's mind or international or whatever, or the person sitting next to you. But suffering is something to fight against no matter where it's located. And forget this distinction of you and me. Because we already said that if you make the decision with practice, you can include other people into what you call Michael Roach. They will be Michael Roach. And then any suffering in you or in me, meaning me or me, becomes unacceptable. You know, and we won't put up with that. We decide, I will not put up with that. You know, it's as if it was me hurting. It is me hurting, okay? You got to forget the as if, okay? Forget the as if. It's when David Sykes is down, I'm down. And I must take steps to do something about it. And that's profound. That's very profound. Any suffering that's going on is something that I have to attack. You know, period. It doesn't matter. It's artificial that you say it's someone else's suffering, so I don't have to work on it as hard as I have to work on my own. That's an artificial decision, and it's a sick decision, and it creates a lot of bad karma. It's a lot smarter, it's infinitely more intelligent to forget the boundary of what you call you and me, and any suffering that anyone in this room is feeling is unacceptable to everyone in this room. They're all our suffering, okay? Same as my own, okay? Yeah. Yeah, because it is a suffering. We got to get to the tunpei. Tunpei yang da. Tunpei yang da. Good. Here we go to the tunpei. I bet it'll answer your question. Perna. There's one more part to the statement. Say perna. Daki. Dunya. Shino. Perna. Daki. Dunya. Shino. I want you to practice something for January, okay? February. And you say, Da Chi Chen. Say, Da Chi Chen. Mi Da De Che Ba Yin Be Chi Pena Pumba Shino. Okay, that's what all 12-year-olds in the monastery learn. Okay? Da Chi Chen, Mi Da Che Ba Chi Pena Pumba Shino. Okay? Pena is called Tunpei Yang Da. Pena means, I'll give you an example to prove the logic I just gave you. Pena means, for example, and it's a part of a logical presentation. When you present a logical statement, in Asian logic, you must give this. Parana means, for example, I'll give you something you can accept, and then you'll believe what I said about other people's pain. Okay? I'll give you an example that you can accept, and if you accept that example, you must accept what I just said. Okay? And by the way, you can only give an example that the person accepts. If you give an example that the person doesn't accept, even if it's true, in Buddhist logic, it's a false statement. Very interesting. I'll repeat that. If you give an example to someone that they cannot personally understand or accept, that they already accept, then your statement is false, even if the example you gave was true. It's not allowed in Buddhism to make an argument to someone using components that they don't accept. It's bad logic. It's very interesting. That's not true in Western logic. Okay? Pena daki dunya shinyan. Dak means my. Daki. Dunya means suffering. Shino means it's like my own suffering. Let's consider other people's pain. It is something that I must personally take responsibility to remove because it's pain. Prove it. Just like your own pain. Okay? Same thing. Okay? And that's airtight logical statement in Buddhism. Dharmakirti, Shantideva, Master Shantideva, Master Dharmakirti, Gyaltsep Jay. Gyaltsep Jay was one of the greatest logicians Tibet ever saw. He probably was, actually, next to Khyen Rinpoche. No. But this is the logical statement. And this is profound, and this is totally true. And what it means is you cannot tolerate suffering wherever it exists. Okay? Because it's the same as your own. If you're going to get more radical, you'd say it is your own. Okay? It is your own. You cannot put up with suffering in any mental continuum that exists in the world. You should not tolerate it anymore. And I'll give you an example. I mean, if you have friends, close friends, and they seem to be having mental afflictions, which you never know for sure, right? They could be Buddhas. You never know. But if they seem to be having a mental affliction, it's your responsibility to help them remove it. Why? Sooner or later, it will cause you as much suffering as it's causing them. Believe me. You know, you tend to have, if someone's a friend of you and they're doing something wrong in support of you, you tend to think it's okay. You see what I mean? If someone close to you is having a mental affliction, and particularly if it benefits you at that moment, you're kind of thinking, well, that's okay. But ultimately, it will hurt everyone. What I'm trying to say is that any time you see a state of suffering, either actual suffering or potential suffering, you must do something about it. You have to do something about it. Okay? It hurts everyone. Okay? Any suffering in the world hurts everyone. You must take steps to stop any suffering in the world. Forget this idea of who you are. And until you do that, you'll never reach enlightenment. You'll never be happy. Period. Won't happen. Can't happen. Never will happen. Just cannot happen. Okay? Won't happen. You must forget this idea of there's a limit to me. Okay? Forget it. Yeah. Thelma pointed this out. Suppose I see someone suffering, and she said, what if it's just your perception and they're not really suffering? I'll give you an example. The Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, appears to be getting bald, okay? So suppose I send him some Rogaine or something, you know. I'm not being disrespectful, because he's the greatest, one of the greatest lamas in the world. Up there with Khyen Rinpoche and stuff. And a few others. Does he see himself suffering? Maybe not. You know, maybe he sees himself as this, you know, beautiful Avalokiteshvara, shining in white light, with his long, beautiful flowing hair, you know. Everyone's still there, you know. And it's my karma to see him as a normal person getting old. By the way, that's exactly the emptiness of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, right? I still have to act to remove that suffering. That's a good question. I still must act, okay? When we all get enlightened, we'll all be running around helping each other, even though we're all enlightened already, because that's what we should do, okay? Yeah. This is the opposite of schizophrenia. This is like, anyway. She asked, I mean, there's a limit to practically what you can do. Marvin asked me this question. He was talking about his credit card limit and how much he wanted to help other people, but that he was reaching his max, you know, which is happening to me a few weeks ago. So And what I said to Marvin is what Master Shantidev says over and over again. A responsible bodhisattva must do what they can do, and that's all you can do. So if all you have is $20, and you give away that $20, or you give away whatever is left over once you've taken care of certain responsibilities that you already have, you have perfected giving, period. And that's no problem. Conversely, the Buddha has specifically prohibited us from doing more than we can do happily. If you get to a point where you're starting to feel bad about it, or feel like it's being an imposition on you, or particularly if you might go back on it later, you are prohibited from by the Buddha, specifically from giving that object. You have to wait until you build up your strength. You know, you have to wait till you build up your spiritual strength. So yeah, that depends on your own level, and in Buddhist ethics, and in Buddhist bodhisattva activity, you're required to stick to that level. You know, you're prohibited from giving away more than you can give away joyfully at any given time. Okay, but you must work to build up that level. Okay, we got one more logical proof here. By the way, this is very profound. I mean, I didn't see anybody fall off the chair. But anyway, it means you cannot put up with you. We have to reach a point where we will not tolerate suffering no matter what person's mind it's in. Okay? If we see someone suffering, we must go after it. Okay? And forget this distinction of me and you because I'm not feeling it. Whether or not you feel it, by practice, it can learn to be intolerable to you. And you have to practice. You'll reach a point where another person's pain is intolerable to you as much as your own, even though you're not feeling it directly. Okay, I think what John said is that ultimately, and I don't want to get too deep into that because I'm not supposed to, okay? You're right. Okay, but anyway, ultimately, what other people are is very much depending on your own conceptions. So really what might be happening is that one conception is helping another conception. That's fine. And that is actually dependent origination of bodhisattva behavior, but that's a long story. Okay. I don't know if this stuff erases too much. Scratch out this one and put Deva. This way I have to work less. I mean, you have to work less. Master Shantideva is constantly saying it don't work that way, okay? Like, well, since me and Nigel are the same, I'll go have a nice milkshake and he'll enjoy it, you know. No, you have to make sure he gets a nice milkshake, okay? Say, Semchen, Shengi, Dewa, Chuchen, okay? Daki, Drupar, Rikte, okay? Semchen, Shengi, Dewa means, now let's flip around and talk about other people's Dewa, which means happiness, okay? Let's talk about other people's happiness. Let's consider other people's happiness. Daki drupa rikte. It is something which I should work to bring about. I should work for other people's happiness. Why? Here comes the reason. Paropo. Semchen. Yimbeichu. Okay. Semchen means living being. Paropo means that one over there. Okay. That one over there. Because that person over there is a person. Okay? Because that person over there is a person. Dayanda. Correct reason. Airtight proof. Okay? Consider living being. Consider this guy over there. Consider this person. It's very true that I should work to achieve every kind of happiness because the guy over there is a person. And that's the only proof you need. You know? If they're a living, suffering person, you have to try to get them some happiness. Period. Okay. Berna, for example. Say, Berna, Dagi Lu, Shino. Berna, Dagi Lu, Shino. Berna means, for example. Dagi means my. Lu means body. Shino means, it's like my own body. And you just have to try to imagine this. It is so holy and sacred that it's very, very difficult to imagine. It's very, very difficult to imagine this, okay? And it's so important that it's so beyond us that we can't quite grasp it, okay? But you must try in your life to bring happiness to other people, because it's the same thing as making yourself happy. Okay? It's exactly the same thing. And that's Dakshin Yama. Okay, then you must do that. And what I'm trying to say is this: it's very, very profound and very, very holy, is that you must work to create a state of happiness anywhere it can be created. It's your job. Okay? Forget the fact that there's 10 feet between you. You know, forget the fact that you are not going to directly, personally feel the pleasure that they feel. You must create any happiness you can in the world. Any little happiness that can be created in any person's mind in the whole world, it's your responsibility and your pleasure and your honor to go create it. Okay? It's very cool. It's very profound. It doesn't matter whether it's in your mind or another person's mind. It doesn't matter anymore. You are one person. You know? It's really cool, because there's a lot more happiness as you can make than if you're limited to your own body and your own mind. Just think of all of the happinesses you can create. I'm not limited to one body and mind anymore. I'm liberated. You know, I get as much excitement out of making sure that he gets what he wants as I do about making sure I get what I want. I would just as soon have him get this incredible pleasure that I would love to have. I'm dying to have it. But, okay, let's make another one, you know. And you create this pleasure, and you, it doesn't matter it seems to be another person's mind. Okay? It's not. It's yours. Just imagine what it would feel like. It's like Eddie Murphy, Fat Man movie, right? I mean, suppose you're so fat that you covered the whole United States, you know, and that any happiness that anyone got was your happiness. You know, and you could just go around the whole United States trying to create happinesses in people's minds, and it would be yours. And how I don't know, radical or profound that would be, that you're just going around trying to create new happinesses and you're not bound by what you call yourself. That would be profound. That would be so happy. You know, that would be so liberating, not to be bound by what you call yourself. You know, and it's, try it. I just say try it. Try it on a very little level, right? Shantidevian exercise program. You know, start small. And try it on a very, very small level. Like, imagine what would make another person happy. Particularly if you have to give it up for what you call yourself. You know, offer it, share it with someone else. Put it, give it to them. You know, give it to them. And watch it. And see how it feels. Just try it. Okay? I can't do anything else. You know, I can describe it to you. I can quote the verbs, you know, and the logic and everything else. But just check it out. You know, purposely, especially if it's at your, quote, own expense, which it's not, go take some happiness and plant it in somebody else that you really want, and just sit there and enjoy it. And if you get used to that, there's no feeling like that. And you will truly be liberated. Really, you'll be really, everything will be happy for you. Your whole life will be happy, you know, incredibly happy. Everyone's trying to be happy, right? I mean, 6 million people. I don't know, it's like 1 million people go through the Port Authority every morning. Why? I used to have this old Mongolian Lama. We would sit on the side of Highway 9, you know, and he'd pull me down, you know, and we'd sit on this bench, and he'd say, look at the cars, you know, and I'd be like, no, I got to go study, you know, and he'd say, no, look at the cars. And we'd sit and look at the cars, you know, and he like had TB, he had one lung, you know, and he says, look, everybody. I said, what? He says, everybody. I said, I don't know what. He says, they're all going somewhere. And I said, yeah, they are going somewhere. And he says, yeah, but you know why? And I said, no. And he says, everybody wants something, you know. Like, the reason that car is moving is that there's a person in there who wants something. And he's like, look at all these people who want something, you know. And he's like, check it out. And I'm like, yeah, okay, they all want something, you know. And what I'm saying is that you can, I mean, 6 million people in New York are running around like ants around the city trying to get something, you know, and they can't get it. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. I've tried all the coffee shops in the East Village. This morning I was trying to find one that I haven't had breakfast in yet. I couldn't find one. I finally bumped into Tessie and she took me to a new one, thanks. But, you know, there's nothing to make you happy. It won't, it can't. It won't. It doesn't. You know, try this out. Check it out. It's extraordinary. You feel really, really happy. It makes you really, really happy. Go and take some kind of happiness, especially one that you wanted for yourself, and go offer it to someone. And just sit there and sit back and enjoy it. And then just make a habit of it. And get this vision of tinkering with other people's brains, you know, like, I'm going to give this person the happiness. Let's see, what's the best way to do it, you know? Okay, they like that, and they have this kind of expectation, and they're kind of down about that. Okay, I got the happiness for them, you know, and you get it all ready, and then you lay it on them, you know, and then sit back and just enjoy it. It's like putting a light in someone's mind, you know, and enjoy it, and you'll never find any happiness like that. It's ultimate happiness, okay? Try it. Okay, last thing. Really last thing, right? Master Shantideva, being a logician, has one more proof for us. And he says, it's wrong to do the opposite of what I just described. It's very, very wrong. Wait for a while, okay? It's very, very wrong to do the opposite of what I described. What's the opposite? Just to be concerned about your happiness, okay? Just to worry about you. And just to try to stop your own suffering. Very, very wrong. Profoundly wrong. A profound mistake. Okay, and it breaks all the laws of nature, breaks all the laws of logic. Now why? Because we grew up in, by the way, the people in this room, I salute you, you know. You are struggling not only against your own mind, you are struggling against the whole culture. You're struggling against hundreds and hundreds of years of culture which tell you it's right to watch out for number one. You know, you should try to take care of yourself. You are not responsible for every homeless person in New York, you know. You can't do it. You just watch out for yourself. You know, take care of yourself. Your whole upbringing, your thousands and thousands of past lives, your whole culture, TV, magazine, what your parents told you, your school, the world is you're bucking the whole world, and it's almost impossible. You know, but you are supposedly you're going to go out and prove why it's wrong to watch out for yourself only. Okay, and that's what Master Shantideva is trying to do. Very profound. I mean, is one sentence on a Tuesday night at 9:20 when you're already very tired gonna buck the whole world and everything you ever heard? Well, let's see. I don't know. Okay, da, she, nika, dewa, dopa, sumba. Okay. Proof why it's the most stupid thing you can do in the world to take care of yourself only. Dag dang, dag means me. Dang means an. Shen means other people. Nika, both of us. And he uses a very beautiful word in Tibetan. It means the two of us, just the two of us, okay? Dewa, happiness. Dupar, we want. In that, okay, in that, Tsumba means we are exactly the same. Okay? Me and other people are exactly the same in that we both want happiness. This is just beyond us. I mean, it's beyond a normal person. It doesn't strike you. It doesn't affect you. I didn't see anybody's mouth drop open. It's beyond us. We're not capable of hearing it. You know? It's stupid to take care of yourself because you and other people want to be happy. You're exactly the same. There's no difference between you and other people. So why are you just taking care of yourself? It's crazy. Okay? I mean, that's supposed to be some kind of profound thing. I mean, if you really were ready to hear this, you know, you would burst out crying at this point or something. You know? It's true. You know, everybody's the same. So why are you just taking care of one person? What's the matter with you? You know, everybody wants to be happy. So why are you just taking care of one of them? Oh, because I can feel it. Stupid. You know, stupid. Really stupid. You know, really bad, evil. You know, bad reasoning. You know, I take care of myself because I'm the only one who can feel what I feel when I feel good. You know, it's crazy. You are the same. Everyone's the same. Everyone wants to be happy. Everybody wants things. Everybody's looking for something. Why are you just taking care of one of them? You know, it's sick. You know, and Shantideva says, just improper, wrong. Okay, something wrong. Something wrong with you. Why are you doing that? You know, everybody wants to be happy. There's no difference between you and other people. So why are you just taking care of one person? It doesn't make sense. He says, mirik, okay? Second reason, and then we're done. Dong, Shen, Nika. Then you have to jump down here. Dungel, Mindurpa, Sungpa. Okay, say again, because it's holy words, okay? I mean, you only get to say this kind of thing. People think mantras are big deals, right? These are holy words. This is a holy mantra. You don't have to do this 100,000 times. I mean, one time saying these words is the best thing you've done in a year or something. Say, Dak, Dang, Shen, Nika, Dungel, Mindurpa, Sungpa. Dak, Dang, Shen, Nika means, Dak means me, and Dang, Shen means and other people. Nika, both of us. Dungel means pain. Mindurpa means we don't want it. Or means in that, okay, in that. Sungpa, we are 100% the same. We are exactly the same. Me and other people are exactly the same in that we don't want any kind of pain. So why are you just watching out for one person? Now, why are you only caring about one person's pain? Why do you restrict your vision to one person? You know, why? Like, Shantideva is like, Master Shantideva is very adamant at this point. He says, there's something wrong with you? You know, are you sick? You know, are you crazy? I mean, you can't see that you and other people are exactly the same? So why, out of all the millions of the people in the world, you just choose one and try to keep them out of pain? You know, why is it that you only respond to one person's pain and not everybody's? But what's the matter with you? You don't see other people have pain? You can't sense that they're having pain? You don't feel some of their pain? And why are you just worrying about your pain? You know, what's wrong with you? You know, and he's very adamant about it. So that's his argument. That's his argument that we should be as worried about other people's pain as we are about our own. Because why? To call them other and you is just your decision. You know, it's up to you. You have the power to decide. And if you choose to say, his pain and my pain are different, then you'll never be happy. Period. You know, and you'll never be able to make other people happy, which is even worse, okay? I'll repeat that. As long as you put up with the distinction, as long as you say, his pain is different from my pain, I have to take care of my pain. I don't care about what he wants. As long as you draw that line, you will never be happy. And worse than that, you can never help other people be happy, okay? Which is the whole point of bodhicitta. So that's the argument today. We had some heavy arguments, you know. We had some heavy-duty things. They are very, very profound. You have to keep reading it and looking at it. And when you walk out of here tonight, you have to visualize other people walking around and picture what it would be like if you took care of their happiness the way you took care of your own. And then start small with carrots and potatoes, okay? Start small, but start, okay? If you don't start, this whole thing is a waste. You must, tonight, look at some other person and try to imagine, you know, what kind of pain do they have? What kind of happiness do they want? I'll give it to them. I'll be like the big karmic Santa Claus of the world, you know. And whatever they want, I'll get it for them. You know, I'll take care of that. And it's liberating. You know, if you never do anything else about Buddhism class, that's the key. You know, that will just make you so happy. Even if you do it a little bit, it makes you a lot happier. Even if there's no such thing as enlightenment, there's no such thing as future lives, it's all just, you know, eat as much ice cream now as you can. You know, it's still the best thing to do. It's still a lot more fun to do it. Okay, we had one question, then we'll stop. Yeah. Sumba means exactly the same. Yeah, Tsumba is not just the same. Tsumba is a word that means exactly the same. Identical is pretty good, but it's too many syllables. I like short ones. Same. Exactly the same. Judy said, what do you draw the line about happiness? Because it would make my daughter very happy if I didn't make her do her homework every night. And Marvin asked me that again, too. He's probably a deity sitting there. He said, I have a friend who's into drugs or alcohol or something, and it would make them very happy if I gave them lots of money to get more drugs and alcohol. As a Buddhist, and your bodhisattva vows say that you are prohibited from giving someone a gift which would harm them, even if it would make them happy at the moment. Okay? So as a Buddhist, you are prohibited. And the examples in scripture are, for example, if a person comes up to you and says, I want to commit suicide, you know, can you get me a gun? You're not allowed to do it. You know, if someone wants something which would be immoral, you know, they say, you know, come and have adultery with me or something like that. It would make them happy, sure, but it would make a lot more suffering later. So you can't do that. You have to judge what would be of ultimate benefit to people. Now, I heard a person in Dharamsala in 1975 say to Geshe Dage, well, then I shouldn't do anything for anybody because it's all suffering. You know, when I give somebody ice cream, it's just suffering. When I buy a pizza for my friends at Two Boots, I like the plain kind, okay? you know, it's just going to cause them suffering. You know, it's the truth of suffering. It's the noble truth of suffering. I shouldn't do anything for anybody. And Geshe Dage just laughed, you know, and he said, listen, you're trying to be a bodhisattva. You have to start with small pleasures that make other people happy. And that's fine. It's true that they are suffering. It's true that a pizza is eventually a cause of suffering. But if it makes this little sentient being happy for 5 minutes to bite into this Two Boots pizza with the mug of root beer, with the boot, then do it for them. You owe it to them, you know. Do it for them, okay? That was his answer. I'll remember that answer. Okay. The word person, kangsat, in Tibetan and in Sanskrit, the word atman, they cover all sentient beings and any living creature. Like an ant is called a person in Tibetan. A roach is called a person in Tibetan. Okay. And so when I say person, I mean that. Okay. The word in Tibetan is the same. Okay. All right, we'll stop there. Try to do it, okay? Try to do something tonight or tomorrow. Plan and execute a happiness in someone else's mind, particularly if it costs you, okay? And then say, why the hell did I do that? This is crazy. I wanted to have that pleasure tonight. And then say, wait, I know why I did it, because they're me, okay? And you have to get to that point. If you still think of them as somebody else, you can't do it, okay? You have to work on the definition of who you are. If you're still thinking of them as somebody else and that you're doing this for somebody else, it's not going to work. I tell you, it's not going to work. You must think, I am giving my fingers some pleasure. You know, I'm giving my toes some pleasure. This guy is me. This guy is part of my body, okay? And I'm just taking care of me. Okay, we'll stop there.
푼돌라 Idam Guru Ratna Mendala Kamniya Dayami Gyawadi Gyokun Sunam Yeshe Tsongzokshin Sunam Yeshe Lejongwe Tambao Gunye Dovansho